Thank you all for joining us today for Friday's, today's Fireside Chat Friday. Oh my goodness, I need some more coffee. anyway, we are, we're going to continue our discussions, basically pick up where we left off last week. If you guys recall, I have shown some signage. Gosh, that's a tongue twister as well. This has been all corporate vetted and marketing approved. We're very happy about this. This was actually put together by our CWS staff, the Cognizant Workplace Services staff. So I was very happy to get that implemented across our entire portfolio. As I just mentioned, we finished up a call with our M&A groups, at least some of them. And once we figure out exactly more of those individual site contacts and where they are with their sort of temperature, so to speak, about returning to the office, the anxieties, those feelings there, and to really pick up and see where they are physically at with assessing their spaces. It's exactly what you and I have been talking about, from the distancing aspects, the workstation allocation, A and B shifts, weekend shifts, you know, whatever it may be. For my site here in Charlotte, we've actually got, I don't have a timeline for the return of the associates still. However, I have been under direction now to go ahead and prepare the site as if we were going to be starting back up basically in 2 weeks. So I've got to go ahead and prepare for all the way down from first aid, make sure that all of those supplies are there. I had my break room vendor in last week. We're going to reassess and move some things around, get rid of our vending machines. For one, our sales have been extremely low on those over the past 3 years. And then for two, the building actually has a micro market that will be locked down to visitors of the building, but will be open to building occupants. So our ID badges will still allow us to get into that space. It's sort of a way of restricting the movement of people and the basically just limiting the touch points there. But over the course of today and then next week, I've got an entire row of signage up here on our reception desk that I'll be going around making sure that's posted up in specific locations. And if I can pick up my camera and show you guys, I've got some already on the walls. You actually see back over here, this was black and white stuff that I had printed out just so I could really wrap my head around what I need to procure from our Reaper Graphics team and the laminating group up in Naperville, which is where all of our stuff comes from. So I'm still getting in products. We've got hand sanitizer stations, the hands-free stuff and foot-operated pumps and things like that. We've got those coming in. I've got plexiglass shields that are going to go up all around this desk that I'm sitting at, just as another way of, you know, sneeze guard and otherwise to help prevent the spread of not only this, but of, you know, really anything else. This is more so than just COVID response, right? Like we're preparing for anything, flu season, you know, any normal situation in an office environment. Definitely taking it back out of just solely specific to the COVID stuff. And that's why none of our branded material will show COVID, will show the virus itself, will show anything about it. Because this is meant to stay up for much longer than that. We still don't have a timeline exactly how long that new normalcy will last. Heck, I'm still at phase zero, right? Like I don't have any associates in. My IT guy is sitting behind me in his office, preparing our office. From the ransomware attack and other stuff, we basically shut down all of our internal systems. So then when we brought those back up online, there is naturally some problems. We've got projects still coming in, so that's a good thing, not into the Charlotte office, but from a network and infrastructure standpoint, we've got to set that up and make sure that they're ready to go. One of our clients, this office is actually a business continuity. This is their backup location to the Louisville office. So we've got to set up all of their devices in here and get them ready to go from a security access standpoint. I've got that system over here to my left. We're monitoring that daily, still making sure that our badges are working as appropriately and everything there. But the next biggest thing for me is like I said at the very beginning of this, oh, this is actually a good one. Got a series of these. They're called Connected and Protected. That's what we're going with as far as our slogan. And it's, of course, branded with Cognizant, marketing approved. To go back to Don, what we were talking about several weeks ago now, you remember the communications coming out and how they're going to come out. Well, that process has apparently changed once again. Same with our the process by which if I were to have associates come in and the and heaven forbid, you know, one of them has positive case, same, that has changed as well. How am I going to notify those people? That's changed. It's basically been a fine-tuning sort of a process throughout this entire thing. But with that, you know, kind of like a quality circle. You plan, do, check, act, and then you come back around and keep on going around. That's kind of what we find ourselves in at this current time. There's multiple right ways to go about this. You've seen it at grocery stores. You've seen it in Lowe's and otherwise. Yeah, go ahead, Doc. I'll stop there and let you guys talk.
Just had a quick question, Dallas, and I'm curious, have you seen anything on the role of cubicle partition walls in this COVID-19 stuff, return to work kind of thing? Because we have like three different styles of cubicles right now. We have the old style that is, you know, basically a 6 foot high, close to it, 66, 68 inches high, cubicle wall. We have a newer style that is definitely a 66 inch high wall, but it's a glass partition at the top. And we were kind of batting around, you know, how does this work as a barrier? And my thinking is, like, most of those cubes with these are the new cubes that have a 66 inch high wall, and the top part of it is a glass element. And I stood at one. The cubes are 6 feet by 6.5. So you're probably close to 6 feet for most people, unless you just, you know, butt up against the wall for some reason. With the person next to you. But in most cases, most people are actually, just by default of the way the cubicles are arranged, they are roughly 6 feet apart. But also, if I stand at that glass element, I would have to stand on my tippy toes and intentionally sneeze over the top of the wall to infect my neighbor. I'm pretty sure most people are going to be seated down during the day, so most people will be lower. But even if you're a standing person, I don't see, you know, typically the folks who are standing have a monitor in front of them, if not at least a pair of monitors. And again, unless you're just really intentionally sneezing up, I don't know how you'd infect the person next to you apart from just breathing, and assuming that your breathing rises up over the glass partition. I just was curious, is there any information on the role that these partitions play in protecting us from any kind of spreadable disease?
Well, I haven't actually seen anything come out about partitions, but I definitely believe that they could help prevent that. Craig, if you recall our last webinar, and Don, if Yeah, I can't remember if you were on that call or not, but go back to our newsletter this week and review the recording. There's something on YouTube that that Rob Chubb actually, it was a video that showed how someone who expires, and I'm not talking about guys, but who expires, you know, normal breathing or a cough or something like that, a sneeze, how those air particles will travel with your normal HVAC. Just your normal air circulation can carry it up and over an 8 foot high, I think it was like a, basically corridors, imagine at a shopping center, you know, they're basically aisleways. So, you know, those are 7-8 foot tall. Sure. And it was, this video showed how those air particles lingered immediately in front of the person after they coughed, but then over the time, I think, Craig, correct me if I'm wrong, like 6 minutes or so. This was a speed elapsed video, so it wasn't six minutes long. But how those air particles actually traveled over and then dispersed as they, of course, you, like a drop of oil in water, you know, it will disperse out.
Gotcha.
But you bring up an excellent point about the monitors and about other things, putting things in between associates, each other, right? And I think our desk components can definitely do that. But it still, I think, still goes back to, and Roland, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, still goes back to the distancing aspect. So if Don, I imagine yours are set up kind of like four or six or maybe eight together.
We have groups of, on the second floor, it's groups of four together, which is where we have the newer cubicles. The third floor has a whole variety of, they have one of the other styles. So it's, our customer service center is on the third floor, and they have a totally separate style of cubicle that does not really have a partition between individual cubicles. I mean, there is, so like you have a line that divides me from the neighbor on one side, but between me and the person in front of me, there's a low wall only. Okay. And we're looking at placing a plexiglass partition in that space to raise that wall a bit to kind of help with this issue. But other cubicles are kind of arranged sort of side by side, and there may be offices interspersed at various points, mostly in the corners. And then you have one team area that is our technical services team. They're sort of walled off from the rest of the world, but their space is shared amongst themselves. But it's a wide space, and they're, all three of them are well over 6 feet apart from each other.
Now, is National Gypsum also going to require them to wear, your associates to wear face masks at their desks?
You know, we decided at your desk, you can remove your face mask.
Okay. That case.
But I don't know that that's technically implemented yet. It's supposed to be when people return to the office. But anytime you're up and about, you definitely have to have your mask out. I think right now it's, people are really not being overly critical if we're at our desks and don't have our mask on. But if somebody enters my space, I'm supposed to put my mask on.
Yep. That's why I have it here. I still have daily janitorial coming in. As I mentioned, my IT guy is in. So both of us, we've got our face masks ready. And actually on that topic, well, Ben, I see you in the chat. Where's yours, sir? Come on in.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Hey there. Thanks for letting me join the call. So quickly on that, remember at Domtar Corporate Real Estate Space down in Fort Mill, we did a soft reopening, returned to office strictly voluntary on May 11th. So this question about seating scenario and, hey, how do I feel about coming back after all these building preps you guys have done and everything, that question continues to linger. What about spacing, the 6-foot rule when I'm on campus? So it hasn't been an issue yet because we've only been tracking on an average about 10% or right around 60 people coming in routinely Monday to Friday, and then about half of those folks staying most of the day. So for the most part, a lot, you know, 50% or better are coming in, checking in, and leaving, going home again. So what we did, we went around, it sounds like you're, you know, gentleman that was just talking there, Don, doing a lot of the same things, faced with the same questions. We went around with a tape measure, and we measured every single workstation. We left the private offices alone, right, because they got a door. And we're between 6 and 10 feet throughout. And what it all boils down to, and what I've been telling leaders, and it, this thing has kind of been quiet. I continue to share the same research. It comes down to personal responsibility, social responsibility. And so we've set the expectation that, yes, you're on campus, that's your choice. Wearing a mask is also, for right now, your choice. But you need to stay 6 feet apart and make those efforts to respect your neighbor, because everybody doesn't feel the same way about how close their neighbor is to them. But so long as you're seated, the other thing we got going for us, our furniture is, some of it's from the 90s, you know, and it's older cloth panel, not a lot of modern, you know, the workstation area is larger. The panels, I've got 5'4" tall splines separating workstations and clusters of 8 to 10. And the other thing is they're all facing the same direction. So when I'm sitting down working and facing my monitor, I'm looking at the back of my neighbor's head closest to me. In customer service, you mentioned it's kind of ironic, our customer service department on the 3rd floor. And those folks, just by nature of their business, their tasks, they're having to interact. They hang up the phone call here. I got this guy taking an order. I need to talk to you about this, that, and the other. So we've got 4-foot walls that are in some cases the separator between them and their neighbor. So I am waiting on pricing right now on extending those. I've got some inventory in a warehouse. I might be able to just add on, stack on, whether it's transparent or glass, which is the highest cost, or even there, you know, there's tons of plexiglass solutions that are coming out right now. Yep. But personal responsibility, that's, we're saying respect your neighbor. If you leave, we've got another office in Montreal. Something else that you mentioned that reminded me, up in Montreal, we also manage, not only do we occupy a couple of floors of a high rise, we manage this multi-tenant space. So in that building, we've said, if you leave, again, if you get up from your workstation, you're going to break the 6-foot barrier on your way to the break room or the restroom or whatever it is at the coffee pot. If you're moving, take your mask, put your mask on. So up there, we've made it mandatory when you move.
Well, I think, Ben, I think part of that was because of the premiere up there in Canada, right?
I don't know. This was a voluntary return to office in Montreal. I think it was 13 story. And I don't know when that event took place, but.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And the numbers were low up there too. So it really hasn't been an issue. You know, my biggest inhibition, the thing that I struggle with, I'm still looking for solutions on, is, you know, what if and when we get our highest numbers back in the office and we are breaking that 6-foot barrier. I mean, somebody asked me on a leadership call a few weeks ago, what would it take, Ben, to get the office to a point that it's safe? And I said, hey, I don't even know, because we don't know when that point is. We don't know if everyone's coming back, we don't know when, and we certainly can't predict what the guidelines and restrictions and recommendations are going to be at that point. Mm-hmm. So I said, unless we're going to look at spending tons of money on removing furniture and reconfiguration and power and flooring, I said, we're sitting pretty right now, ideal scenario with this outdated furniture between 6 and 10 feet of separation. And let's ask people to just be responsible and protect their neighbor. I told them, hey, personally, I've not been wearing a face mask because I, you know, I've got allergies. I just had septoplasty surgery on my septum last Friday, for crying out loud. It's hard to breathe with that thing on, and it fogs up my glasses. Anybody that wears glasses probably agree with that. But if my neighbors, I mean, I had one guy, you know, there's not many people on campus, but I've been going in, and we came to a corridor passage, a doorway at the same time. I couldn't see he was approaching. There was no side light or window, right? And he was a little bit more uneasy about that closeness than I was. So in that case, I was like, listen, if it's mandatory, I'll take one for the team, I'll don a mask. And that's what we're saying. Just folks, just if you're moving, put a mask on.
Mm-hmm. And you brought up
some good idea.
Come on in.
Yeah, this is Russ. I joined last week, but hey, I can't connect via Zoom. But good afternoon, and or I should say morning to everybody. You know, to this point, we are also doing the measuring to see if we meet that minimum 6 foot criteria. We also have old workstations with the high walls that are fabric. But since last week, we've mandated that people have to wear a face mask when they leave their workstation to any common area. And we've also administered to each person their personal thermometer. So they have to take their temperature in the morning and then in the afternoon and self-record that. And if they go over 100.4, we tell them they should advise HR and they should go home.
Yep.
And we are implementing that countrywide now, even though we only have 7 locations out of 21 open.
Ross and Ben, y'all have said a lot of very similar things, but it's neat to see how two different companies are taking it in two different approaches there. And for the other three of us FMs on the call, it's pretty well kind of three different things there too. Three different kind of scenarios or strategies to come back. Ben, I wanted to touch on the ability to have, so I've got this on video, Ben, I'm not sure if you can see it or not, but it's, it essentially puts the onus back on the associates to take care of themselves. And it matches up exactly with what you said about staying 6 foot apart from each other, bringing the awareness to the associates. And when you come on site, it's kind of like a driver's license for the state of North Carolina or really any state in the union. It's a privilege to be driving. Coming into the office is kind of going to be a privilege to come into the office. You have to kind of abide by that, this new normalcy, the new guidelines, restrictions, whatever you want to call it, the new strategy for people to be in the office. If your company doesn't require face masks, you know, that's not on it. But if your company does require face masks in common areas, it's on the associates to take care of themselves. It's on us as the FM staff to make sure that we're monitoring that, not really acting as police. That's really more their managers, but we have to have that open communication with them. I wanted to turn it over to Craig. You've been chatting me back and forth about some clear face masks, and Roland, we brought that kind of issue up, I think, last week or maybe 2 weeks ago when discussing if you're hearing impaired, you know, it's very difficult to read lips if those lips are covered. So Craig, what's your story?
Yeah, so I have a customer of mine who his business is actually dealing and helping the hearing impaired. And while I was there, he was actually doing a presentation to his staff on those face masks I just put up in the thing, because every single one of their customers is hearing impaired. And so the face masks, I mean, a large percentage of their communication is reading lips. And with this face mask requirement, it was very, very bad for his company, for people not to be able to read lips and make communication nearly impossible. But there's another thing I wanted to bring up. Being in the restoration industry, we are required with our employees who are working in the field to do respiratory fit testing when you're going to wear a mask. And the reason being is not everybody has the lung capacity or the stamina to be able to handle wearing a mask and working. And so I was just wondering how people are handling the concerns. There are several YouTube videos that you can find on site where OSHA people have actually taken O2 sensors, CO2 sensor, and actually stuck them next to their mouth, regular breathing with no mask, put on a surgical mask, had the tubes still there, and the oxygen levels dropped below by several percent, you know, what they would recommend for an environment that's safe to work in. Mm-hmm. And now you also have people who are making their own masks, so you have no idea what the pass-through rate of the air is through those things. And what do you do if people say, listen, wearing the mask is giving me headaches. I'm short of breath. I'm having trouble concentrating. I'm allergic to the fiber. You know, I mean, how are people handling that if you're going to mandate people wearing these things, but no one is actually testing them to see if their health actually allows them to be able to wear it safely without causing health problems for them simply from wearing the mask?
Yep. You bring up an excellent point, Craig, and one that, and my organization has taken the stance, if we require face masks in public and common areas, then we should really have to provide those face masks or provide a stipend for associates to get their own. So that's kind of where my organization is. We're leaning toward the stipend for them just to provide their own. If that's kind of on, the onus is back on the associate, though. To your point, if they can't breathe in it and work effectively, you know, essentially that's what it is. Oxygen levels go way down, you know, they become unsafe in a matter of, you know, minutes, seconds even, just after normal expelling and with CO2 trapped right there at your mouth. So it's definitely educating them on proper uses of it, how to appropriately wear a mask and how to take it on and off appropriately, not wear it down here and keep it clean and other things. But it also is that attestation from the associate that they know how to wear it, that they know how to wear it properly, and that they can wear it properly. That's kind of all three of those go into, they're kind of like check boxes in order to even kind of come into the office.
Yeah, we've had several employees that tried to come to work for us and to do remediation work. And when we went to get them fit tested because they were smokers, they couldn't pass the fit test and we couldn't hire them. They couldn't wear a respirator. They didn't have the lung capacity. They couldn't do it. So we couldn't hire them.
Well, that does sound like a problem.
Yeah.
We're at the beginning of this entire thing. It's uncharted territories, not only for my organization, all of our organizations, really. You know, unless you've been, Craig, in the after disaster with the restoration business, I know you guys are more familiar with wearing masks than someone in, say, in an office environment.
Correct.
So that's, that kind of PPE is normal for you guys, for your staff out there in the field. Bottom line, if they can't wear the PPE appropriately and perform their job duties, then yeah, that's going to be an issue.
Dallas, this is Roland.
Yes.
As of today, our head of school is requiring masks for return to school. Now, to take care of that and to standardize, we are paying for the mask. It won't be able to have any emblems on it except our TES emblem. Won't be able to have any messages or anything to be able to talk about, even an American flag or stuff like that. But my point that I tried to make with my business officer in his school is that we can't make everybody in their own little bubble world.
Right.
Okay. We're in a school environment. Telling a bunch of kindergartens or first grades they can't run together and play together is kind of going to be difficult. It's going to be a challenge. Telling adults they can't play together is sometimes a challenge as well. But the main point I was trying to make is that when you talk about sneeze guards that Don was talking about earlier and stuff of that sort, putting up petitions way up high, Dallas, you pointed out the YouTube videos about the flow of the viruses and stuff of that sort. We can't control everything.
Right.
We can only minimize. And if we want to try to control everything, the cost could just go totally out of whack.
Roland, that's a great point. That to specifically that point that we can only minimize things, that's one of the big reasons why we've limited so much in our break room. You know, cutting off our microwaves, cutting off the refrigerator, not actually unplugging and removing them, but rendering them otherwise, you know, unusable, marking it as do not use. We're trying to limit the touch points as much as we possibly can, even with frequent cleaning and otherwise. If in phase one we can take that draconian approach and limit it down completely, then hopefully we can do exactly what you just said, and that's minimize the spread. That's our number one goal, is to minimize it, which will effectively help to ensure the safety and healthiness of our building occupants. That's really essentially all we can do.
What I like to hear though, Dallas, is that from the crew, is that the governor's orders and stuff of that sort and federal orders, that's minimum guidance.
Correct.
There's nothing to say we can't extend that to do better, to require in KN95, N95 masks, to require different type masks, to require face shields. I'm talking to our school nurse about what is the difference between wearing a mask and wearing a face shield, or a clear mask like Craig put the link to. I'm trying to get them to try to think out of the box. What's best for the school?
I'm curious, what sort of feedback have you gotten from the nurses?
Well, she ties into the School Nurse Association with independent schools, also talks to the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Health and North Carolina Health, the North Nurses Association. They're getting mixed responses, because even the health organizations, they are mixed about what masks are actually dangerous for you, as Craig pointed out.
Got a good point.
Long-term wear. For short-term wear, about any mask is decent, but the basic cloth mask doesn't stop anything.
That's a major concern.
So why require something that's not going to be effective?
Yep.
And that's the points I'm trying to get across and trying to get them to discuss at the independent association level.
Okay.
Yep, that's a great point. You know, we can only do so much with this. This will help to, again, minimize the spread. It's not, because I can breathe through this, air particles are still coming in and out. So it can definitely trap heavier particles. And clear masks may be more effective, or a face shield may be less effective. As you pointed out, there's difference of opinions there. But it's ultimately, Roland, you pointed out again, just minimizing as much as we can. That's all we can do. And that's providing sanitizing stands. We're providing the opportunity for associates to take care of themselves. Proper signage and awareness about how to properly hand wash. You know, it goes back again to associates taking care of themselves. That's the first piece of it.
We could just put plastic over our mouths and noses and make sure you get a good seal.
Yeah. Or all live in, you know, those bubbles, like Bubble Boy or whatever. There was a movie some time ago. Yeah, we could all live in those suits, I guess, but.
Don, you get a chance, take a look at Craig's link about the clear mask. That is an excellent design.
I actually have that up on my screen right now. I'll see if I can do something along those lines. But the other thing we're doing that, you know, okay, we can't control everything, right? But we are working on contact tracing through our badge access system.
Yep.
So we're working to create a report every day. Right now we have to manually export the report from our badge access system, but we're trying to work if we can do this in an automated fashion, where we can automate the process of getting that report out of our badge access system. And we already have we have some internal developers, and they've already developed the report that they pull from our manually saved report. So we export that to a CSV file, and they pull it automatically, run the and they're going to set it up where they can email the leadership team, and the leadership team is going to get a report, and it's going to be like you see you get a pie chart. How many people per leadership team member actually had a login on the previous day? And there will even be a list of like who actually came in if they want to see those things. So if I come in tomorrow and it turns out I've got COVID-19, they can actually go back and say, okay, here's who else was in the building that day. And what is the potential for contact with me? And we did have one person that tested positive. So I think this is a really good way to make sure we do the contact tracing. So mitigate and always have your plan B, right?
We're going to be doing the same thing as well. Any associate, especially for the Charlotte office, but also for our other corporate offices, we're pretty much all on one security system. So that's good for our corporate security group. They can monitor that. They can pull my records without me even being here. So they can monitor the contact tracing, but more importantly, activate only those badges that are of people that are coming back. And then that can further help crowd control and otherwise.
Well,
gentlemen, I've got to run. I'm actually 15 minutes late for another merger and acquisition call, but I trust that group will be able to handle everything there. A link of this recording will be available. Penny's going to distribute that out in next week's newsletter. Next Friday, we are taking off because it's July 3rd. So I want to wish everyone a happy and a safe 4th of July holiday. And I look forward to picking up these discussions here in just a matter of 2 weeks. So thank you all.
Thank you. Thanks. See ya.
Thanks, bye-bye. Gentlemen.
See y'all.
Bye.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, be safe.